Well, she's here to explain the world, at least.
We need somebody has to.
Susan Schmidt. Susie Sunshine, as we call her here at the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis, from Dallas, Westwood Financial in Dallas. And Ms. Schmidt, I suppose we start with this, that a lot of people have accounts at Wells Fargo. A lot of businesses have accounts at Wells Fargo. It's a very large bank, right? It's one of the
big. Yes, it is. One of the big ones, for sure.
Right? There's like five big ones left in the United States, and it's one of them. Now this John Stumpf guy, and what an unfortunate name. You know, that Mr. and Mrs. Stumpf or Grandpa and Grandma Stumpf didn't figure out that they needed to change the spelling.
Like Drumpf did.
Right, like Drumpf did, right? Drumpf, I mean, they figured it out. Yes. Yeah, to Trump. It could have been Stump, although that's not good either,
no,
is it?
No,
the Stumps. Yeah, maybe it was better to keep the F on the end. Anyway, the point is that this guy was the CEO of Wells Fargo, goes up to Capitol Hill twice, not once, but twice. Gets his toupee handed to him, and now he is stepping down, and but he gets to retire. He doesn't get fired. What goes on there?
Well, he's getting a, quote, graceful exit. So he's going to step down, and after really stumbling in front of Congress, you know, the first time he went in and he had to face Elizabeth Warren, who was very good at drilling him with questions, and he didn't prepare, I think, quite as efficiently as he could have. And then the second time he went in and he was trying to defend the actions of the bank to the House and explain how they are trying to go back and rectify all of these mistakes. They're fixing the problems. They had, you know, thousands of people work for Wells Fargo. And so the way the incentives were set up, while Stumpf is at the top, he's still the guy in charge, and the incentives were set up. And so it led to these openings of fraudulent accounts that customers didn't want. Now, Wells Fargo is going back and finding all of those and reimbursing the customers for that, but he's the fall guy. So someone needs to go, different people along the way, and so down that pyramid of control at Wells Fargo have also left, but he's the most visible. And so he announced last night that he will be stepping down. And Tim Sloan, who has long been the heir apparent, is going to be stepping in and is now president and CEO.
I think there's a point in the story that I think I know the answer to, but I'd like to hear your explanation. And something I hear everybody say when they hear about this: yes, but he's getting a pay package of $134 million to walk out the door. Isn't he responsible for this? Is that a wise way to use shareholder money? I mean, how do these pay packages get determined? Is that fair?
Well, the pay packages for publicly traded companies and for private companies as well, pay packages are determined by the board of directors. And the board of directors in this case has monitored it, and they've deemed this to be fair. Now, remember that the person that was in charge of retail brokerage left over the summer, and that was where a lot of these problems started. And there was a lot of dismay because it was understood by the street and by Congress that she had walked away with, I think, $130 million as part of her, you know, end package to leave after being in charge of the department where all these mistakes were found.
Right.
So there was a big cry for that, and that she had to reimburse for part of it. And it does seem like they're just huge dollar amounts. The Stumpf's money was because of his contract. It's what the board of directors deemed acceptable and in line with, as Ro already said, it's one of the big banks in the country. So the board of directors determined that this corporate package for compensation was in line with what the other big guys are getting, and that's what they needed to pay him to get him to stay. Until this debacle, Wells Fargo had been regarded as one of the best-run banks, so it's really shocking that it happened
and
to them.
We should go back and explain exactly what happened for people who are not familiar, which is that they were accused of and basically admitted to inflating the numbers of accounts that they had by opening up dummy accounts and moving money around in dummy accounts to manipulate markets and also to make themselves look better on paper than they actually were.
Well, right. Not so much manipulate markets, but for their retail bankers were incented to have their clients and customers open up more accounts. So customers got a savings account that they didn't know they had linked to their existing account. They got a credit card that they hadn't requested suddenly opened in their name. And so various things of that nature happened. Again, the customers never asked for it. That's the problem. And then the retail salesperson who is there, you know, serving the customers in the bank, trying to generate new accounts, is getting comped and getting their bonus based on the number of new items that they can sell. And the whole goal here is that a bank wants you to be very connected to it and not go to another bank. And so the more accounts you have with any one bank, the more ties you have to it, whether it's a credit card, a savings account, a checking account, the less likely you are to go bank somewhere else. And so this incentive caused many of their retail bankers to open up accounts, as they say, fraudulently, and Wells Fargo discovered this. They've gone back and reimbursed, because remember, when they open those accounts, sometimes those accounts come with fees, and so you're paying a monthly fee that you didn't know about, or you've got something hanging out there that you didn't know about that's hitting your account, and you may not recognize it. You may not see it right off the bat. So Wells Fargo has gone back. They're looking through all of that data, and those customers will be compensated for that.
I guess I want to ask you also about the presidential election, because you're hearing, okay, right now Hillary Clinton is up and the map looks like it's heavily in her favor if the election were held today. And then there's this thought that Trump is screwing things up so badly that potentially down ticket other Democrats
right.
may surge, and that may not be what the markets necessarily like.
Exactly. And then, so Anna, you've been paying attention to the markets this week, because that's exactly what happened after the news from last weekend and the perceived weakness in Trump's campaign and his falling poll numbers. The market started to get really worried, because Wall Street likes to have, as we've said many a time, likes to have things stay the same. They don't like surprises. They don't like big change. And so having Hillary potentially win and having another President Clinton in the White House is not so disturbing, because she's a known candidate, a little bit more of a known commodity, because she's been in elected office before. But what would have been very disturbing is if suddenly we had all of the houses of government, so we had the House, the Senate, and the White House, all aligned to one particular party. And so there was concern that suddenly this could cause a Democratic sweep, and that the Democrats could control not only the White House and the Senate, but also the House of Representatives. And so that was concerning to the market, because the market perceives having multiple parties in there as having another brake on things, a way to stop things from changing too quickly or too aggressively. And that was a cause for concern. So we saw some tension in the market on that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I think that's quieted down a little bit today. We've seen more articles showing, again, like Rose Map, that it's unlikely that the House would go fully Democratic, so that majority would stay with the Republicans, and I think that's given the market some comfort.
It's a funny world, isn't it? I mean, that's and I think that for all of us who worry about big issues domestically and internationally, it's really easy to be angry and say, well, let's just break everything. You know, people are going to have the people who think that this is a really good idea to elect Trump they're expressing an emotion more than they are the logic of what is going to occur, the what then moment of what is, because he doesn't have anybody he's going to bring along with him. And anybody he does bring along with him, he's proven he won't listen to. Right. He has been a chaos candidate for people around him in his own campaign. So I can just imagine what the government would look like. And that, I think, is stirring to people who have business in America, big business in America, that has a lot of connectivity to the government. And that's, and I don't know, Trump was talking about that today, about, well, you know, this is a gigantic conspiracy between big business and corporate media, as he calls it, and Democrats and the government, and they run everything, and you have no control left in your lives. I'll cede control back to you. Well, you know, he runs a $10 billion company. I mean, he's not exactly. And in the same speech, he admitted he was part of the problem before.
He is part of big business as well. And it's interesting, because, you know, in the market, it is a big issue. When what if the market doesn't? The market is always thinking through. The market doesn't want to have uncertainty and say, well, I don't understand what's going to happen with corporate tax rates. I don't understand what's going to happen with, you know, our earnings. I don't understand what he's talking about when he talks about border, because I have international workers. There are a lot of things that come into play. So when any candidate is talking about those things, the market, so not only corporate executives, but the shareholders, people investing in those publicly traded companies, want some specifics around that so they can start to frame it and understand how that might affect their business, and by affecting the business, affect its valuation. And having so much uncertainty and so many unknowns always causes concern. And so part of the problem in this is trying to figure out between the policy positions for both of them, where are the vulnerable spots in the market? Because investors are looking to that and then trying to move away from where they might be at risk when they don't know what's coming.
All right. I wish we had more time.
Mm-hmm.
We've run. But one other thing very, very quickly about China. The Chinese economy, China. Appears to be the economy seems to be slowing up significantly here, and that's alarming people, despite the fact that we're hearing about how they're beating us at everything. They're winning, we're losing.
Yes, no. So
they're laughing at us.
Economic data out of China. We're going to get more economic data out of China next week. Today's data from them did not look good. And so point of concern, put it on the back burner. But remember, China's had a rocky period here. Some months look good, some months don't. Today was one of the days where things didn't look great. Imports and exports down. And that, of course, as we've learned, nothing is independent. So when it affects China, if it affects Europe, ultimately, it comes back and affects the U.S. too.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Susan.
Susie Sunshine. Susan Schmidt from Westwood in Dallas. Westwood mm-hmm. Financial Holdings. Isn't that right? Is it the Westwood Holdings? Or what do I call this thing again?
You always get it wrong.
Well, it's so many words for you, Ro. We should just shorten it. Westwood in Dallas is just fine.
Fine.
Westwood Holdings Group.
Senior Portfolio Manager, Senior Vice President, Research Analyst. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Susan.
All right.
Makes you feel a little better, I suppose.
No, not at all.
No?
Violetta is going to make us all feel better right now with the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots. No? Yes?
No, actually.
Oh, damn it!